This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. Listen to us on KPFK, KPFA, and other Pacifica affiliates, and watch us on Free Speech TV Monday through Friday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern. Among the many conflicting thoughts of shock that went through my head on election night as I watched the victory of Donald Trump cement was that once upon a time, only a few months ago, we came so close to having a true progressive with a very real chance of winning running for president. That man is, of course, Bernie Sanders, the veteran independent senator from Vermont who ran as a Democrat against Hillary Clinton during the primary race. Sanders, who drew support from millennial voters in every demographic in every region, held massive rallies during his candidacy. He inspired millions of Americans to participate in the electoral process, much to the chagrin of establishment Democrats. Corporate media outlets, initially refusing to take him seriously, finally realized, perhaps too late, that the senator had tapped into a widespread feeling among Americans that our economy was, in his words, rigged against us. Despite his primary loss, Bernie Sanders has used the spotlight that his candidacy offered to continue his political revolution. In a new book called simply Our Revolution, Sanders tells his story in first person from his humble origins in Brooklyn, New York, to the United States Senate as an independent from Vermont, and then to the decision to run for president, the complex and daunting challenge of organizing a campaign, and finally the issues that lie before us that desperately need fixing. Our Revolution, published by St. Martin's Press, is just out in bookstores now, and Mr. Sanders is on a speaking tour, which we'll give you details of later. I am so pleased and honored to welcome to the program Senator Bernie Sanders.
Well, it's great to be with you.
Now, in my opinion, one of the biggest lessons of your candidacy was to show the Democrats that moving to the left would, in fact, energize the party and bring in more people instead of moving to the right, which many Democratic leaders had been doing. Do you think that that lesson going forward is going to be learned by future Democratic candidates?
Well, if I have anything to say about it, and I do, it will be learned. And the truth is that millions and millions of people in this country are hurting economically. And we don't talk about it. We don't talk about 43 million people living in poverty. We don't talk about the single mom who can't afford childcare or the 60-year-old worker who's scared to death of retirement because that worker doesn't have any money in the bank at all. And we don't talk about people working two or three jobs right now in order to cobble together the income and the health care that they need. That's the reality of America. And what Democrats have got to do is say, yeah, we understand that reality. And on the other hand, we understand something else. And that is that the billionaire class is doing phenomenally well corporate. America is making huge profits. The drug companies are ripping us off. Wall Street has a business model which is fraudulent. And we are going to mobilize the American people and take them on. If you do that, you do the right thing for America and you win elections as well.
Now, in your book, you describe the very hard work that you and your team did to build this campaign, where you combined your political experience of many years with the things that new technologies offer us today. Do you hope for your book to be a handbook of sorts for future progressives in particular who want to run a campaign without accepting big donations and want to really run on the issues?
Yes, and thank you for mentioning that. Look, more than half of the book is not just talking about my campaign. The first half does, and I think it reads well, and I think it's a good lesson to people to understand how you can start a campaign with no name recognition, no organization, no money, and end up winning, you know, 13.4 million votes in 22 states and a majority of young people's votes. But the other half of the book, which is maybe even more important, it says, look, let's be honest, this country faces enormous problems. We are moving in the direction of becoming an oligarchic form of society, where a small number of billionaire families control our economy, control our political life, control our media life. How do we deal with that? What's the best way forward? And we have some ideas. Why are we the only major country on earth not to provide health care or paid family and medical leave to our people? We have some very specific ideas on that. So it is a book which asks people to take a hard look at the problems facing our country and then come up with real answers. In terms of social media, no question in my mind, no question, that the only way the progressive movement in this country grows is through social media. Corporate media is not going to talk about the real issues facing this country, certainly not going to provide us the opportunity. You know, we take advantage of it when we can. But let us not be naive. Corporate media is owned by large multinational conglomerates. And that's the reality.
Well,
so
we
need social media. No, go ahead.
I appreciate you actually giving an interview to an independent journalist for that very reason, because I don't think many in the corporate media have asked you the kinds of questions that I've been wanting to hear. Now, I'm wondering whether you think that electoral politics is something that we can attract enough young people to, because while your candidacy involved and inspired so many young people to get involved in politics, some for the first time, your loss in the primary and then Trump's ascendance has demoralized so many Americans. Now, at this moment, how do you convince young Americans that electoral politics are worth pursuing when electoral politics in 2016 have actually brought about something disastrous?
But it's not either or. I mean, it goes without saying, in my mind, that of course we have got to be involved in electoral politics. I mean, but on the other hand, we also have to understand that there are ways that we can be active. There are ways that we can fight to protect the planet from climate change, that we can fight for women's rights or gay rights or minority rights without being involved in electoral politics. It's not an either or, it is a both. And I think our job is to mobilize millions of people across this country now to stand up and fight. Boy, I am, if you ask me about my major concerns about Trump, of which there are 500, close to the top is his views on climate change and the need for millions of people to mobilize to make certain that we take on the fossil fuel industry, that we stop pipelines, and that we transform this energy system away from fossil fuel to energy efficiency and sustainable energy. So it's to my mind, it's not either or. At the end of the day, of course, electoral politics is enormously important.
Right.
But grassroots activism is equally important.
Now, of course, the other huge thing at the top of the list alongside climate disaster is the very difficult position that many people of color feel in the country today, immigrants,
yes,
brown-skinned people who are very frightened that we are living in a moment where white nationalism has the upper hand. In your book, you talk about how Martin Luther King Jr., right before he was assassinated, was taking on the issues of economic justice. And it feels like we haven't learned that lesson enough in this country, that racial justice and economic justice go hand in hand. Going forward, clearly those two issues have to be together, right? Given that poor whites
also elected Trump. No argument. You're absolutely correct. And the point that I made in the book is when King was assassinated, it wasn't a quote-unquote civil rights event that he was at. He was supporting garbage workers, people who were being terribly exploited. The working conditions were terrible. And he stood with them. And he was also, by the way, at the end of his life, as some will remember, he was organizing a poor people's march of African Americans, of Latinos, of Native Americans, of poor whites. And he said that we have to change the national priorities of this country, less for the military, fewer tax breaks for the rich, and let's take care of the most vulnerable people in this country. And that's what I believe. I believe we've got to bring people together in the richest country in the history of the world and fight for an economy that works well for all of us. And the connection between racism and economics is that historically, what demagogues have always done is played off one group against another group. You know, it says, well, it's the immigrants who are the fault of the economy, or it's black people that the reason you don't have a good job, or women. That's why you don't have a good job. And the answer is, obviously, that these guys go laughing all the way to the bank. You know, the billionaires go laughing to the bank while you have people fighting with each other over crumbs. We've got to bring people together to create an economy that works for all of us. And that's kind of what the book talks about.
Well, Senator Sanders, it's remarkable that so many Americans felt that a billionaire like Trump, who has 24-karat gold-plated fixtures on his private jet, is somebody that they could relate to more than, you know, an immigrant who's living in a big city like Los Angeles. So the question moving forward is how to build that trust. How does that communication happen, particularly when we have things like Facebook that polarizes all of us and corporate media isn't doing its job? What lessons can be learned from your presidential campaign for people to come together face to face and actually learn more about one another and feel like,
I like your last point. That's a very good point. You know, we got a lot of technology, and I'm a great believer in social media and communication. We use that all of the time. We're going to use it even more. But at the end of the day, we need people to sit down, get to know each other, and talk, and to understand what is, you know, maybe one of the deepest truths of humanity, is whether we're black or white or Latino or Native American or Asian American or gay or straight, male or woman, we all have the same fundamental human needs. And skin color cannot be something that separates us. So that's the goal. The goal right now is to bring people together to fight for economic justice, for social justice, for racial justice, and for environmental justice. And I certainly look forward to working with you and the listeners to bring that about. And with that, I'm going to have to apologize because I just have to get off right now.
Thank you so much, Senator Sanders. Really appreciate it.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. My guest is Bernie Sanders, independent senator from Vermont and former presidential candidate, joining me on the phone to discuss his new book, Our Revolution. Senator Sanders will be on book tour around the country, coming to cities like Los Angeles, Chicago, Boston, Philadelphia, Berkeley, San Francisco, and more. For details on how you can get tickets to any of these events, visit the website ourrevolutionbook.com. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can find our interviews online at risingupwithsonali.com and subscribe to our podcast on iTunes.